Dear? Rolf waved a tattooed hand, blood still clinging beneath his nails.
I'll refrain from commenting.
Aelin smirked. You're the heir to the Mycenaean people, she said. Petty squabbles are now beneath you.
Ansel snorted.
Rolf shot her a look. What do you intend to do with them now? Aelin asked. She supposed the rest of her court should have been here, but when she'd dispatched Evangeline to round up their allies, she'd opted to let them rest. Rowan, at least, had gone to seek out Endymion and Selene. The latter, it seemed, was about to learn a great deal regarding her own future, the future of Dorinel. Rolf shrugged.
We'll have to decide where to go. Whether to return to Skull's Bay, or...
His sea-green eyes narrowed.
Or?
Aelin asked sweetly.
Or decide if we'd rather rebuild our old home in Ilium.
Why not decide yourself? Ansel asked. Rolf waved a tattooed hand.
They offered up their lives to fight in this war. They should be able to choose where they wish to live after it.
Wise, Aelin said, clicking her tongue. Rolf stiffened, but relaxed upon seeing the warmth in her gaze. But she looked to Ilias, the assassin's armor dented and scratched. Did you speak at all this entire war?
No, Ansel answered for him.
The mute master's son looked to the young queen, held her stare. Aelin blinked at the look that passed between them. No animosity, no fear. She could have sworn Ansel flushed. Sparing her old friend, Aelin said to them all,
Thank you.
They faced her again. She swallowed and put a hand over her heart. Thank you for coming when I asked. Thank you on behalf of Terrasen. I am in your debt.
We were in your debt, Ansel countered.
I wasn't,
Rolf muttered. Aelin flashed him a grin. We're going to have fun, you and I. She surveyed her allies, worn and battle-weary, but still standing. All of them still standing. I think we're going to have a great deal of fun. At midday, Aelin found Manon in one of the witch's aeries, Abraxos staring out toward the battlefield. Bandages peppered his sides and wings, and covered the former wingleader. Queen of the Krokens and the Iron Teeth, Aelin said by way of greeting, letting out a low whistle that had Manon turning slowly. Aelin picked at her nails. Impressive. Yet the face that turned toward her?
Exhaustion.
Grief.
I heard,
Aelin said quietly, lowering her hands but not approaching. Manon said nothing, her silence conveying everything Aelin needed to know. No, she was not all right. Yes, it had destroyed her. No, she did not wish to talk about it. Aelin only said,
Thank you.
Manon nodded vaguely. So Aelin walked toward the witch, then past her, right to where Abraxos sat, gazing toward Thoralis, the blasted patch of earth. Her heart strained at the sight of it, the wyvern and the earth and the witch behind her. But Aelin sat down beside the wyvern, brushed a hand over his leathery head. He leaned into her touch.
There will be a monument,
she said to Abraxos, to Manon. Should you wish it, I will build a monument right there, so no one shall ever forget what was given, who we have to thank. Wind sang through the tower, hollow and brisk. But then footsteps crunched in hay, and Manon sat down beside her. Yet Aelin did not speak again, and asked no more questions. And Manon, realizing it, let her shoulders curve inward, let her head bow, as she might never do with anyone else, as no one else might understand the weight they both bore. In silence, the two queens stared toward the decimated field, toward the future beyond it. Chapter 119. It took 10 days for everything to be arranged. 10 days to clear out the throne room, to scrub the lower halls, to find the food and cooks they needed. 10 days to clean the royal suite, to find proper clothing, and outfit the throne room in queenly splendor. Evergreen garlands hung from the pews and rafters. And as Rowan stood on the dais of the throne room, monitoring the assembled crowd, he had to admit that Lysandra had done an impressive job. Candles flickered everywhere, and fresh snow had fallen the night before, covering the scars still lingering from battle. At his side, Adian shifted on his feet, Lorcan and Fenris looking straight ahead. All of them washed and brushed and wearing clothes that made them look princely. Rowan didn't care. His green jacket, threaded with silver, was the least practical thing he'd ever donned. At his side, at least, he bore his sword, Goldrin hanging from his other hip. Thankfully, Lorcan looked as uncomfortable as he did, clad in black. If you wore anything else, Aelin had tutted to Lorcan, the world would turn on its head. So burial black it is. Lorcan had rolled his eyes. But Rowan had glimpsed Elide's face when he'd spotted her and Lysandra in the hall off the throne room moments before. Had seen the love and desire when she beheld Lorcan in his new clothes. And wondered how soon this hall would be hosting a wedding. A glance at Adian, clad in terracin green as well. And Rowan smiled slightly. Two weddings, likely before the summer. Though neither Lysandra nor Adian had mentioned it. The last of their guests finished filing into the packed space, and Rowan surveyed the rulers and allies seated in the front rows. Ansel of Briarcliff kept fidgeting in her equally new pants and jacket, Rolf draping an arm over the pew behind her as he smirked at her discomfort. Ilias, clad in the white layered clothes of his people, sat on Ansel's other side, the portrait of unruffled calm. A row ahead, Galen lounged in his princely regalia, chin high. He winked as his Ash River eyes met Rowan's. Rowan only inclined his chin back to the young man, and then inclined it toward his cousins, Enda and Celine, seated near the aisle, the latter of whom had needed a good few hours of sitting in silence when Rowan had told her that she was now Queen of Dorinel, the Fey Queen of the East. His silver-haired cousin hadn't dressed for her new title today, though. Like Enda, she had opted for whatever clothing was the least battle-worn. Such changes would come to Dorinel, ones Rowan knew he could not predict. The Whitethorn family would rule, Mora's line restored to power at last. But it would remain up to them, up to Celine, how that reign would shape itself. How the Fae would choose to shape themselves without a dark queen lording over them. How many of those Fae would choose to stay here, in Terrasen, would remain to be seen. How many would wish to build a life in this war-torn kingdom, to opt for years of hard rebuilding over returning to ease and wealth. The Fae warriors he'd encountered these 2 weeks had given him no indication, yet he'd seen a few of them gaze toward the Staghorns, toward Oakwald, with longing, as if they too heard the wild call of the wind. Then there was the other factor. The Fae who had dwelled here before Terrasen's fall, who had answered Aelin's desperate plea, and had returned to their hidden home amongst the wolf tribe in the Hinterlands to prepare for the journey here, to return to Terrasen at last, and perhaps bring some of those wolves with them. He'd work to make this kingdom worthy of their return, worthy of all who lived here, human or fey or witch kind. A kingdom as great as it had once been, greater, as great as what dwelled in the far south across the narrow sea, proof that a land of peace and plenty could exist. The Khaganate royals had told him much about their kingdom these days, their policies, their peoples. They now sat together on the other side of the throne room, Kaol and Dorian with them. Irene and Nezrin also sat there, both lovely in dresses that Rowan could only assume had been borrowed. There were no shops open,
and none with supplies. Indeed, it was a miracle that any of them had clean clothes at all. Manon, at least, had refused finery. She wore her witch leathers, though her crown of stars lay upon her brow, casting its light upon Petra Blueblood and Bronwyn Crokken, seated on her either side. Adian's swallow was audible, and Rowan glanced to the open doors, then to where Lord Darrow stood beside the empty throne. Not an official throne, just a larger, finer chair that had been selected from the sad lot of candidates. Darrow, too, stared toward the open doors, face impassive. Yet his eyes glowed. The trumpets rang out. A four-note summons repeated three times. Pews groaned as everyone twisted to the doors. Behind the dais, hidden beyond a painted wooden screen, a small group of musicians began playing a processional. Not the grand, sprawling orchestra that might accompany an event of this magnitude, but better than nothing. It didn't matter anyway. Not as Elide appeared in a lilac gown, a garland of ribbons atop her braided black hair. Every step limped, and Rowan knew it was because she had asked Lorcan not to brace her foot. She'd wanted to make this walk down the long aisle on her own 2 feet. Poised and graceful, the Lady of Peranth kept her shoulders thrown back as she clutched the bouquet of holly before her and walked to the dais. Lady of Peranth, and one of Aelin's handmaidens, for today. For Aelin's coronation. Elide was halfway down the aisle when Lysandra appeared, clad in green velvet. People murmured, not just at the remarkable beauty, but what she was. The shapeshifter who had defended their kingdom, had helped take down Erewhon. Lysandra's chin remained high as she glided down the aisle, and Adian's own head lifted at the sight of her. The Lady of Cara Vare. Then came Evangeline, green ribbons in her red-gold hair, beaming, though scars stretched wide in utter joy. The young lady of Arryn, Darrow's ward, who had somehow melted the lord's heart enough for him to convince the other lords to agree to this. To Aelin's right to the throne. They had delivered the documents 2 days ago, signed by all of them. Elide took up a spot on the right side of the throne. Then Lysandra. Then Evangeline. Rowan's heart began thundering as everyone gazed down the now empty aisle. As the music rose and rose, the song of Terrasen ringing out. And when the music hit its peak, when the world exploded with sound, regal and unbending, she appeared. Rowan's knees buckled as everyone rose to their feet. Clad in flowing gauzy green and silver, her golden hair unbound, Aelin paused on the threshold of the throne room. He had never seen anyone so beautiful. Aelin gazed down the long aisle, as if weighing every step she would take to the dais, to her throne. The entire world seemed to pause with her, lingering on that threshold. Shining brighter than the snow outside, Aelin lifted her chin and began her final walk home. Every step, every path she had taken, had led here. The faces of her friends, her allies, blurred as she passed by. To the throne that waited, to the crown Darrow would place upon her head. Each of her footfalls seemed to echo through the earth. Aelin let some of her embers stream by, bobbing in the wake of her gown's train as it flowed behind her. Her hands shook, yet she clutched the bouquet of evergreen tighter. Evergreen, for the eternal sovereignty of Terrasen. Each step toward that throne loomed, and yet beckoned. Rowan stood to the right of the throne, teeth bared in a fierce grin that even his training could not contain. And there was Adian at the throne's left, head high and tears running down his face, the sword of Orinth hanging at his side. It was for him that she then smiled, for the children they had been, for what they had lost, what they now gained. Aelin passed Dorian and Kaol and threw a nod their way,
winked at Ansel of Briarcliff, dabbing her eyes on her jacket sleeve. And then Aelin was at the three steps of the dais, and Darrow strode to their edge. As he had instructed her last night, as she had practiced over and over in a dusty stairwell for hours, Aelin ascended the three steps and knelt upon the top one. The only time in her reign that she would ever bow. The only thing she would ever kneel before. Her crown. Her throne. Her kingdom. The hall remained standing, even as Darrow motioned them to sit. And then came the words, uttered in the old language. Sacred and ancient, spoken flawlessly by Darrow, who had crowned Orlan himself all those decades ago.
Do you offer your life, your body, your soul, to the service of Terrasen?
She answered in the old language, as she had also practiced with Rowan last night until her tongue turned leaden.
I offer all that I am, and all that I have, to Terrasen.
Then speak your vows.
Aelin's heart raced, and she knew Rowan could hear it, but she bowed her head and said,
I, Aelin Ashriver Whitethorn Galathinius, swear upon my immortal soul to guard, to nurture, and to honor Terrasen from this day until my very last.
Then so it shall be,
Darrow responded and reached out a hand. Not to her, but to Evangeline, who stepped forward with a green velvet pillow, the crown atop it. Otterlin had destroyed her antler throne, had melted her crown. So they had made a new one. In the 10 days since it had been decided she was to be crowned here, before the world, they had found a master goldsmith to forge one from the remaining gold they'd stolen from the barrow in Wendlin. Twining bands of it, like woven antlers, rose to uphold the gem in its center. Not a true gem, but one infinitely more precious. Darrow had given it to her himself. The cut bit of crystal that contained the sole bloom of Kingsflame from Orlan's reign. Even amid the shining metals of the crown, the red and orange blossom glowed like a ruby, dazzling in the light of the morning sun, as Darrow lifted the crown from the pillow. He raised it toward the shaft of light pouring through the bank of windows behind the dais. The ceremony chosen for this time, this ray of sun, this blessing from Mala herself. And though the Lady of Light was forever gone, Aelin could have sworn she felt a warm hand on her shoulder as Darrow held up the crown to the sun. Could have sworn she felt them all standing there with her, those whom she had loved with her heart of wildfire, whose stories were again inked upon her skin. And as the crown came down, as she braced her head, her neck, her heart, Aelin let her power shine. For those who had not made it, for those who had fought, for the world watching. Darrow set the crown upon her head, its weight heavier than she'd thought. Aelin closed her eyes, letting that weight, that burden and gift, settle into her.
Rise,
Darrow said.
Aelin Ashriver Whitethorn Galathinius, Queen of Terrasen.
She swallowed a sob, and slowly, her breathing steady despite the heartbeat that threatened to leap out of her chest, Aelin rose. Darrow's gray eyes were bright.
Long may she reign.
And as Aelin turned, the call went up through the hall, echoing off the ancient stones and into the gathered city beyond the castle. Hail Aelin, Queen of Terrasen. The sound of it from Rowan's lips, from Adian's, threatened to send her to her knees. But Aelin smiled, kept her chin high and smiled. Darrow gestured to the awaiting throne, to those last two steps. She would sit, and the ceremony would be done. But not yet. Aelin turned to the left, toward Adian,
and said quietly, but not weakly, "This has been yours from the day you were born, Prince Adian."
Adian went still, as Aelin pushed back the gauzy sleeve of her gown, exposing her forearm. Adian's shoulders shook with the force of his tears. Aelin didn't fight hers as she asked, lips wobbling,
"Will you swear the blood oath to me?"
Adian just fell to his knees before her. Rowan silently handed her a dagger, but Aelin paused as she held it over her arm.
"You fought for Terrasen when no one else would.
Against all odds, beyond all hope, you fought for this kingdom, for me, for these people. Will you swear to continue to do so for as long as you draw breath?" Adian's head bowed as he breathed.
"Yes, in this life and in all others, I will serve you and Terrasen."
Aelin smiled at Adian, at the other side to her fair coin, and sliced open her forearm before extending it to him.
"Then drink, Prince, and be welcome."
Gently, Adian took her arm and set his mouth to her wound. And when he withdrew, her blood on his lips, Aelin smiled down at him.
"You said you wanted to swear it before the entire world," she said so only he could hear. "Well, here you go."
Adian choked out a laugh and rose, throwing his arms around her and squeezing tightly before he backed to his place on the other side of the throne. Aelin looked to Darrow, still waiting.
"Where were we?"
The old lord smiled slightly and gestured to the throne.
"The last piece of this ceremony."
"Then lunch," Fenris muttered, sighing.
Aelin suppressed her smile and took the two steps to the throne. She halted again as she turned to sit. Halted at the small figures who poked their heads around the throne room doors. A small gasp escaped her, enough that everyone turned to look.
"The little folk," people murmured,
some backing away as small figures darted through the shadows down the aisle, wings rustling and scales gleaming. One of them approached the dais, and with spindly greenish hands laid their offering at her feet. A second crown, Mab's crown, taken from her saddlebags, wherever they had wound up after the battle. With them, it seemed, as if they would not let it be lost once more, would not let her forget. Aelin picked up the crown they had laid at her feet, gaping toward the small gathering who clustered in the shadows beyond the pews, their dark wide eyes blinking.
"The Fairy Queen of the West,"
Elide said softly, though all heard. Aelin's fingers trembled, her heart filling to the point of pain, as she surveyed the ancient glimmering crown, then looked to the little folk.
"Yes,"
she said to them,
"I will serve you too, until the end of my days."
And Aelin bowed to them then, to the near invisible people who had saved her so many times and asked for nothing. The Lord of the North, who had survived as she had against all odds, who had never forgotten her. She would serve them, as she would serve any citizen of Terrasen. Everyone on the dais bowed too, then everyone in the throne room. But the little folk were already gone. So she placed Mab's crown atop the one of gold and crystal and silver, the ancient crown settling perfectly behind it. And then finally, Aelin sat upon her throne. It weighed on her, nestled against her bones, that new burden. No longer an assassin, no longer a rogue princess. And when Aelin lifted her head to survey the cheering crowd, when she smiled, Queen of Terrasen and the Fairy Queen of the West, she burned bright as a star. The ritual was not over, not yet. As the bells rang out over the city, declaring her coronation, the gathered city beyond cheered. Aelin went to greet them. down to the castle gates, her court, her friends following her, the crowd from the throne room behind. And when she stopped at the sealed gates, the ancient carved metal looming, the city and world awaiting beyond it, Aelin turned toward them, toward all those who had come with her, who had gotten them to this day, this joyous ringing of the bells. She beckoned her court forward, then smiled at Dorian and Kaol, at Irene and Nezrin and Sartak and their companions, and beckoned them forward too. Brows rising, they approached. But Aelin, crowned and glowing, only said, "Walk with me." She gestured to the gates behind her. "All of you." This day did not belong to her alone. Not at all. And when they all balked, Aelin walked forward, took Irene Westfall by the hand to guide her to the front. Then Manon Blackbeak, Elide Lochin, Lysandra, Evangeline, Nezrin Felik, Borte and Hassar and Ansel of Briarcliff. All the women who had fought by her side, or from afar, who had bled and sacrificed and never given up hope that this day might come. "Walk with me," Aelin said to them, the men and males falling into step behind. "My friends." The bells still ringing, Aelin nodded to the guards at the castle gates. They opened at last, and the roar from the gathered crowds was loud enough to rattle the stars. As one, they walked out, into the cheering city, into the streets, where people danced and sang, where they wept and clasped their hands to their hearts at the sight of the parade of waving, smiling rulers and warriors and heroes who had saved their kingdom, their lands. At the sight of the newly crowned queen, joy lighting her eyes. A new world. A better world. Chapter 120. 2 days later, Nezrin Felik was still recovering from the ball that had lasted until dawn. But what a celebration it had been. Nothing as majestic as anything in the southern continent, but the sheer joy and laughter in the great hall, the feasting and dancing. She would never forget it, as long as she lived. Even if it might take her until her dying day to feel rested again. Her feet still ached from dancing and dancing and dancing. And she'd spotted both Aelin and Lysandra grousing about it at the breakfast table just an hour ago. The queen had danced, though, a sight Nezrin would never forget either. The first dance had been Aelin's to lead, and she had selected her mate to join her. Both queen and consort had changed for the party, Aelin into a gown of black threaded with gold, Rowan into black embroidered with silver. And what a pair they had been, alone on the dance floor. The queen had seemed shocked, delighted, as the Fey Prince had led her into a waltz and had not faltered a step. So delighted that she'd crowned them both with flames. That had been the start of it. The dance had been... Nezrin had no words for the swiftness and grace of their dance, their first as queen and consort. Their movements had been a question and answer to each other. And when the music had sped up, Rowan had spun and dipped and twirled her, the skirts of her black gown revealing Aelin's feet, clad in golden slippers. Feet that moved so quickly over the floor that embers sparked at her heels, trailed in the wake of her sweeping dress. Faster and faster Aelin and Rowan had danced, spinning, 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 the queen glowing like she'd been freshly forged as the music gathered into a clashing close. And when the waltz slammed into its triumphant final note, they halted, a perfect sudden stop, right before the queen threw her arms around Rowan and kissed him. Nezrin was still smiling about it, sore feet and all, as she stood in the dusty chamber that had become the headquarters for the Khaganate royals and listened to them talk. "The healer on high says it will be another 5 days, until the last of our soldiers are ready," Prince Caution was saying to his siblings. To Dorian,
who had been asked into this meeting today.
And you will depart then?
Dorian asked, smiling a bit sadly.
Most of us,
Sartak said, smiling with equal sadness. For it was friendship that had grown here, even in war. True friendship, to last beyond the oceans that would separate them once more. Sartak said to Dorian,
We asked you here today because we have a rather unusual request.
Dorian lifted a brow. Sartak winced.
When we visited the Farian Gap, some of our Rukin found wyvern eggs, untended and abandoned. Some of them now wish to stay here, to look after them, to train them.
Nezrin blinked, right along with Dorian. No one had mentioned this to her. I thought the Rukin never left their Ares, Nezrin blurted.
These are young riders,
Sartak said with a smile. Only 24. He turned to Dorian.
But they begged me to ask you if it would be permissible for them to stay when we leave.
Dorian considered.
I don't see why they couldn't.
Something sparked in his eyes. An idea formed and then set aside.
I would be honored, actually.
Just don't let them bring the wyverns home, Hassar groused. I never want to see another wyvern for as long as I live. Caution patted her on the head. Hassar snapped her teeth at him. Nezrin chuckled, but her smile faded as she found Dorian smiling sadly at her, too.
I think I'm about to lose another captain of the guard, the King of Otterland said.
Nezrin bowed her head. She hadn't anticipated having this conversation. Not right now, at least.
But I will be glad, Dorian went on, to gain another queen whom I can call friend.
Nezrin blushed. It deepened as Sartak smirked and said,
Not queen, empress.
Nezrin cringed, and Sartak laughed, Dorian with him. Then the king embraced her tightly.
Thank you, Nezrin Falik, for all you have done.
Nezrin's throat was too tight to speak, so she hugged Dorian back. And when the king left, when Kashan and Hassar went to find an early lunch, Nezrin turned to Sartak and cringed again.
Empress, really?
Sartak's dark eyes glittered.
We won the war, Nezrin Falik.
He tugged her close.
And now, we shall go home.
She'd never heard such beautiful words. Kaol stared at the letter in his hands. It had arrived an hour ago, and he still hadn't opened it. No, he'd just taken it from the messenger, one of the fleet of children commanded by Evangeline, and brought it back to his bedroom. Seated on his bed, the candlelight flickering through the worn chamber, he still couldn't bring himself to crack the red wax seal. The doorknob twisted, and Irene slipped in, tired but bright-eyed.
You should be sleeping.
So should you,
he said with a pointed look to her abdomen. She waved him off, as easily as she'd waved off the titles of savior and hero of Irelia. As easily as she waved off the awed stares, the tears, when she strode by. So Kaol would be proud for both of them, would tell their child of her bravery, her brilliance. What's that letter? She asked, washing her hands, then her face, in the ewer by the window. Beyond the glass, the city was silent, sleeping after a long day of rebuilding. The wild men of the Fangs had even remained to help, an act of kindness that Kaol would ensure did not go unrewarded. Already, he had looked into where he might expand their territory, and the peace between them and Aniel. Kaol swallowed.
It's from my mother.
Irene paused, her face still dripping. You're... Why haven't you opened it? He shrugged.
Not all of us are courageous enough to take on dark lords, you know.
Irene rolled her eyes, dried her face,
and plopped down on the bed beside him. Do you want me to read it first?
He did.
Damn him, but he did. Wordlessly, Kaol handed it to her. Irene said nothing as she opened the sealed parchment, her golden eyes darting over the inked words. Kaol tapped a finger on his knee. After a long day of healing, he knew better than to try to pace. Had barely made it back here with the cane before he'd sunk to the bed. Irene put a hand to her throat as she turned the page, read the back. When she lifted her head again, tears slid down her cheeks. She handed him the letter. You should read it yourself.
Just tell me.
He'd read it later.
Just tell me what it says.
Irene wiped at her face. Her mouth trembled, but there was joy in her eyes. Pure joy. It says that she loves you. It says that she has missed you. It says that if you and I are amenable to it, she would like to come live with us. Your brother Taryn, too. Kaol reached for the letter, scanning the text, still not believing it. Not until he read, I have loved you from the moment I knew you were growing in my womb. He didn't stop his own tears from falling. Your father informed me of what he did with my letters to you. I informed him, I shall not be returning to Aniel. Irene leaned her head against his shoulder while he read and read. The years have been long, and the space between us distant, his mother had written. But when you are settled with your new wife, your babe, I would like to visit, to stay for longer than that, Taryn with me, if that would be all right with you. Tentative, nervous words, as if his mother, too, did not quite believe that he'd agree. Kaol read the rest, swallowing hard as he reached the final lines. I am so very proud of you. I have always been, and always will be. And I hope to see you very soon. Kaol set down the letter, wiped at his cheeks, and smiled at his wife.
We're going to have to build a bigger house,
he said. Irene's answering grin was all he'd hoped for. The next day, Dorian found Kaol and Irene in the sick bay that had been moved to the lower levels, the former in his wheeled chair, helping his wife tend to a wounded Kraken, and beckoned them to follow. They did, not asking him questions, until he found Manon atop the Aerie, saddling a Braxos for his morning ride, where she'd been each day, falling into a routine that Dorian knew was as much to keep the grief at bay as it was to maintain order. Manon stilled as she beheld them, brows narrowing. She'd met Kaol and Irene days ago, their reunion quiet but not chilly, despite how poorly Kaol's first encounter with the witch had gone. Irene only embraced the witch, Manon holding her stiffly. And when they'd pulled apart, Dorian could have sworn some of the paleness, the gauntness, had vanished from Manon's face. Dorian asked the witch queen, Where do you go when everyone leaves? Manon's golden eyes didn't leave his face. He hadn't dared ask her. They hadn't dared speak of it, just as he had not yet spoken of his father, his name. Not yet. To the wastes, she said at last. To see what might be done. Dorian swallowed. He'd heard the witches, both Ironteeth and Krokins, talking about it. Had felt their growing nerves and excitement.
And after?
There will be no after. He smiled slightly at her, a secret, knowing smile.
Won't there be?
Manon asked, What is it that you want? You, he almost said. All of you. But Dorian said,
A small faction of the Rukin are remaining in Otterland to train the Wyvern hatchlings. I want them to be my new aerial legion. And I would like you, and the other Ironteeth, to help them.
Kaol coughed, and gave him a look as if to say, You were going to tell me this when?
Dorian winked at his friend and turned back to Manon.
Go to the wastes. Rebuild.
But consider it.
Coming back. If not to be my crowned rider, then to train them.
He added a bit softly.
And to say hello. Every now and then.
Manon stared at him. He tried not to look like he was holding his breath. Like this idea he'd had mere minutes ago in the Khaganate Royal's chamber wasn't coursing through him, bright and fresh. Then Manon said, It is only a few days by Wyvern from the wastes to Rifthold.
Her eyes were wary, and yet that was a slight smile.
I think Bronwyn and Petra will be able to lead, if I occasionally slip away, to help the Rukin.
He saw the promise in her eyes, in that hint of a smile. Both of them still grieving, still broken in places.
But in this new world of theirs,
perhaps they might heal, together.
You could just marry each other, Irene said, and Dorian whipped his head to her, incredulous. It'd make it easier for you both, so you don't need to pretend.
Kaol gaped at his wife. Irene shrugged. And be a strong alliance for our two kingdoms.
Dorian knew his face was red when he turned to Manon. Apologies and denials on his lips. But Manon smirked at Irene, her silver-white hair lifting in the breeze, as if reaching for the united people who would soon soar westward. That smirk softened as she mounted Abraxos and gathered up the reins. We'll see, was all Manon Blackbeak, High Queen of the Crokins and Ironteeth, said, before she and her wyvern leaped into the skies. Kaol and Irene began bickering, laughing as they did. But Dorian strode to the edge of the eyrie, watched that white-haired rider and the wyvern with silver wings become distant as they sailed toward the horizon. Dorian smiled and found himself, for the first time in a while, looking forward to tomorrow.
Chapter 121. Rowan knew this day would be hard for her. For all of them, who had become so close these weeks and months. Yet a week after Aelin's coronation, they gathered again. This time not to celebrate, but to say farewell. The day had dawned, clear and sunny, yet still brutally cold. As it would be for a time. Aelin had asked them all to stay last night. To wait out the winter months and depart in the spring. Rowan knew she'd been aware her request was unlikely to be granted. Some had seemed inclined to think it over, but in the end, all but Rolf had decided to go. Today, as one, scattering to the four winds. The Ironteeth and Crokins had left before first light, vanishing swiftly and quietly, heading westward toward their ancient home. Rowan stood beside Aelin in the castle courtyard, and he could feel the sorrow and love and gratitude that flowed through her as she took them in. The Khaganate royals and Rukin had already said their goodbyes, Borte the most reluctant to say farewell. And Aelin's embrace with Nezrin Felik had been long. They had whispered together, and he'd known what Aelin offered. Companionship, even from thousands of miles away. Two young queens with mighty kingdoms to rule. The healers had gone with them, some on horseback with the Dargon, some in wagons, some with the Rukin. Irene Westfall had sobbed as she had embraced the healers, the healer on high, one last time, and then sobbed into her husband's arms for a good while after that. Then Ansel of Briarcliff, with what remained of her men. She and Aelin had traded taunts, then laughed, and then cried, holding each other. Another bond that would not be so easily broken, despite the distance. The silent assassins left next, Ilias smiling at Aelin as he rode off. Then Prince Galen, whose ships remained under the watch of Ravian Sol in Surya, and who would ride there before departing to Wendlin. He had embraced Adian,
then clasped Rowan's hand before turning to Aelin. His wife, his mate, his queen had said to the prince, "You came when I asked. You came without knowing any of us. I know I've already said it, but I will be forever grateful."
Galen had grinned.
"It was a debt long owed, cousin, and one gladly paid."
Then he too rode off, his people with him. Of all the allies they'd cobbled together, only Rolf would remain for the winter, as he was now lord of Ilium. And Falcon Inar, Lysandra's uncle, who wished to learn what his niece knew of shapeshifting, perhaps build his own merchant empire here, and assist with those foreign trade agreements they'd need to quickly make. More and more departed under the winter sun, until only Dorian, Kaol, and Irene remained. Irene embraced Elide, the two women swearing to write frequently. Irene wisely just nodded to Lorcan, then smiled at Lysandra, Adian, Wren, and Fenris, before she approached Rowan and Aelin. Irene remained smiling as she looked between them. "When your first child is near, send for me and I will come, to help with the birth." Rowan didn't have words for the gratitude that threatened to bow his shoulders. Fey births. He didn't let himself think of it, not as he hugged the healer. For a moment, Aelin and Irene just stared at each other. "We're a long way from Inish," Irene whispered.
"But lost no longer,"
Aelin whispered back, voice breaking as they embraced. The two women who had held the fate of their world between them, who had saved it. Behind them, Kaol wiped at his face. Rowan, ducking his head, did the same. His goodbye to Kaol was quick, their embrace firm. Dorian lingered longer, graceful and steady, even as Rowan found himself struggling to speak past the tightness in his throat. And then Aelin stood before Dorian and Kaol, and Rowan stepped back, falling into line beside Adian, Fenris, Lorcan, Elide, Wren, and Lysandra. Their fledgling court. The court that would change this world. Rebuild it. Giving their queen space for this last, hardest goodbye. She felt as if she had been crying without end for minutes now. Yet this parting, this final farewell. Aelin looked at Kaol and Dorian and sobbed, opened her arms to them and wept as they held each other.
"I love you both," she whispered. "And no matter what may happen, no matter how far we may be, that will never change."
"We will see you again,"
Kaol said, but even his voice was thick with tears.
"Together,"
Dorian breathed, shaking.
"We'll rebuild this world together."
She couldn't stand it, this ache in her chest. But she made herself pull away and smile at their tear-streaked faces, a hand on her heart.
"Thank you for all you have done for me."
Dorian bowed his head.
"Those are words I'd never thought I'd hear from you."
She barked a rasping laugh and gave him a shove.
"You're a king now. Such insults are beneath you."
He grinned, wiping at his face. Aelin smiled at Kaol, at his wife waiting beyond him.
"I wish you every happiness," she said to him,
to them both. Such light shone in Kaol's bronze eyes that she had never seen before.
"We will see each other again,"
he repeated. Then he and Dorian turned toward their horses, toward the bright day beyond the castle gates, toward their kingdom to the south. Shattered now, but not forever. Not forever. Aelin was quiet for a long time afterward, and Rowan stayed with her, following as she strode up to the castle battlements to watch Kaol, Dorian, and Irene ride down the road that cut through the savaged plain of Thoralis, until even they had vanished over the horizon. Rowan kept his arm around her, breathing in her scent as she rested her head against his shoulder.
Rowan ignored the faint ache that lingered there from the tattoos she'd helped him ink the night before. Gavriel's name, rendered in the old language. Exactly how the lion had once tattooed the names of his fallen warriors on himself. Fenris and Lorcan, a tentative peace between them, also now bore the tattoo. Had demanded one as soon as they'd caught wind of what Rowan planned to do. Adian, however, had asked Rowan for a different design. To add Gavriel's name to the Terrasen knot already inked over his heart. Adian had been quiet while Rowan had worked. Quiet enough that Rowan had begun telling him the stories. Story after story about the lion. The adventures they'd shared, the lands they'd seen, the wars they'd waged. Adian hadn't spoken while Rowan had talked and worked. The scent of his grief conveying enough. It was a scent that would likely linger for many months to come. Aelin let out a long sigh. Will you let me cry in bed for the rest of today like a pathetic worm? She asked at last. If I promise to get to work on rebuilding tomorrow? Rowan arched a brow, joy flowing through him, free and shining as a stream down a mountain.
Would you like me to bring you cakes and chocolate so your wallowing can be complete?
If you can find any.
You destroyed the word keys and slew Maeve. I think I can manage to find you some sweets.
As you once said to me, it was a group effort. It might also require one to acquire cakes and chocolate. Rowan laughed and kissed the top of her head. And for a long moment, he just marveled that he could do it, could stand with her here, in this kingdom, this city, this castle where they would make their home. He could see it now. The halls restored to their splendor, the plain and river sparkling beyond, the staghorns beckoning. He could hear the music she'd bring to this city, and the laughter of the children in the streets, in these halls, in their royal suite. What are you thinking about? She asked, peering up at his face. Rowan brushed a kiss to her mouth.
That I get to be here, with you.
There's lots of work to be done. Some might say as bad as dealing with Erewhon.
Nothing will ever be that bad.
She snorted. True. He tucked her in closer.
I am thinking about how very grateful I am. That we made it. That I found you. And how even with all that work to be done, I will not mind a moment of it. Because you are with me.
She frowned, her eyes dampening. I'm going to have a terrible headache from all this crying, and you're not helping. Rowan laughed and kissed her again.
Very queenly.
She hummed. I am, if anything, the consummate portrait of royal grace. He chuckled against her mouth.
And humility. Let's not forget that.
Oh, yes, she said, winding her arms around his neck. His blood heated. Sparking with a power greater than any force a god or word key could summon. But Rowan pulled away, just far enough to rest his brow against hers.
Let's get you to your chambers, Majesty, so you can commence your royal wallowing.
She shook with laughter. I might have something else in mind now. Rowan let out a growl and nipped at her ear, her neck.
Good. I do, too.
And tomorrow? She asked breathlessly. And they both paused to look at each other, to smile. Will you work to rebuild this kingdom, this world, with me tomorrow?
Tomorrow. And every day after that.
For every day of the 1,000 blessed years they were granted together. And beyond. Aelin kissed him again and took his hand, guiding him into the castle, into their home. To whatever end? She breathed. Rowan followed her, as he had his entire life, long before they had ever met, before their souls had sparked into existence.
To whatever end, Fireheart.
He glanced sidelong at her.
Can I give you a suggestion for what we should rebuild first?
Aelin smiled. An eternity opened before them, shining and glorious and lovely. Tell me tomorrow. A Better World. Brutal winter gave way to soft spring. Throughout the endless snowy months, they had worked on rebuilding Orinth, on all those trade agreements, on making ties with kingdoms no one had contacted in 100 years. The lost Fae of Terrasen had returned, many of the wolf riders with them, and immediately launched into rebuilding, right alongside the several dozen Fae from Dorinel who had opted to stay, even when Endymion and Selene had returned to their lands. All across the continent, Aelin could have sworn the ringing of hammers sounded, so many peoples and lands emerging once more. And in the south, no land worked harder to rebuild than Eelwe. Their losses had been steep, yet they had endured, remained unbroken. The letter Aelin had written to Nehemia's parents had been the most joyous of her life. "I hope to meet you soon," she'd written, "and repair this world together." "Yes," they had replied. Nehemia would wish it so. Aelin had kept their letter on her desk for months. Not a scar on her palm, but a promise of tomorrow. A vow to make the future as brilliant as Nehemia had dreamed it could be. And a spring at last crept over the Staghorns. The world became green and gold and blue. The stained stones of the castle cleaned and gleaming above it all. Aelin didn't know why she woke with the dawn. What drove her to slip from under the arm that Rowan had draped over her while they slept? Her mate remained asleep, exhausted as she was. Exhausted as they all were, every single evening. Exhausted, both of them, and their court. But happy. Elid and Lorkin, now Lord Lorkin Lockin, to Aelin's eternal amusement, had gone back to Peranth only a week ago to begin the rebuilding there, now that the healers had finished their work on the last of the Volg possessed. They would return in 3 weeks, though, along with all the other lords who had journeyed to their estates once winter had lightened its grasp. Everyone would converge on Orinth then, for Adian and Lysandra's wedding. A prince of Wendlin no longer, but a true lord of Terrasen. Aelin smiled at the thought as she slipped on her dressing robe, shuffling her feet into her shearling-lined slippers. Even with the spring fully upon them, the mornings were chill. Indeed, Fleetfoot lay beside the fire on her little cushioned bed, curled up tightly. And as equally exhausted as Rowan, apparently. The hound didn't bother to crack open an eye. Aelin threw the blankets back over Rowan's naked body, smiling down at him when he didn't so much as stir. He much preferred the physical rebuilding, working for hours on repairing buildings and the city walls, to the courtly bullshit, as he called it, meaning anything that required him to put on nice clothing. Yet he'd promised to dance with her at Lysandra and Adian's wedding. Such unexpectedly fine dancing skills her mate had.
"Only for special occasions," he'd warned after her coronation.
Sticking out her tongue at him, Aelin turned from their bed and strode for the windows that led onto the broad balcony overlooking the city and plain beyond. Her morning ritual, to climb out of bed, ease through the curtains, and emerge onto the balcony to breathe in the morning air. To look at her kingdom, their kingdom, and see that it had made it. See the green of spring, and smell the pine and snow of the wind off the Staghorns. Sometimes Rowan joined her, holding her in silence when all that had happened weighed too heavily upon her. When the loss of her human form lingered like a phantom limb. Other times, on the days when she woke clear-eyed and smiling, he'd shift and sail on those mountain winds, soaring over the city or Oakwald or the Staghorns, as he loved to do, as he did when his heart was troubled or full of joy. She knew it was the latter that sent him flying these days. She would never stop being grateful for that, for the light, the life in Rowan's eyes. The same light she knew shone in her own. Aelin reached the heavy curtains, feeling for the handle to the balcony door. With a final smile to Rowan, she slipped into the morning sun and chill breeze. She went still, her hands slackening at her sides, as she beheld what the dawn had revealed. "Rowan," she whispered. From the rustle of sheets, she knew he was instantly awake, stalking toward her even as he shoved on his pants. But Aelin didn't turn as he rushed onto the balcony, and halted too. In silence, they stared. Bells began pealing, people shouted, not with fear, but in wonder. A hand rising to her mouth, Aelin scanned the broad sweep of the world. The mountain wind brushed away her tears, carrying with it a song, ancient and lovely, from the very heart of Oakwald, the very heart of the earth. Rowan twined his fingers in hers and whispered, awe in every word, "For you, Fireheart, all of it is for you." Aelin wept then, wept in joy that lit her heart, brighter than any magic could ever be. For across every mountain, spread beneath the green canopy of Oakwald, carpeting the entire plain of Thoralis, the King's Flame was blooming.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Kingdom of Ash, written by Sarah J. Maas. Performed by Elizabeth Evans. Executive producers, Laura Gatchko and Mike Charzik. Producer, Neil Basic. Copyright 2018 by Sarah J. Maas. Sound recording copyright 2018 by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.